grandstand at Stumps.
Goes forward and hits it in the air. He's good.
Yeah, he's bowled him.
Hits it high in the air down towards Long on out.
Carnage here at Belrive. Wickets tumbled throughout day two. There were 17 of them all up. An equal record number of them in a day's play in a test match in Australia. But ultimately, it was a continuation of Australia's stranglehold on this Ashes series by way of again dismissing England for another score under 200. This is Grandstand at Stumps in the cool late evening at Belrive Oval as we look back on day two of this fifth Ashes test. Brett Sprigg joined by Dirk Nannis and Kristen Beams, the man who took 3 for 53 from his 10 overs. Left arm quick, Mitchell Starc joins us on Grandstand at Stumps. Mitch, welcome.
How you going?
I feel like both teams would feel pretty happy with how plans were executed throughout day two. How satisfied were you from an Australian point of view?
Yeah, it's moving along pretty quickly. I guess added a few runs this morning and then got stuck in our work with the ball. Obviously, it's been, a high percentage of boundaries for both teams so far this game, but it's obviously come off with a lead in the first innings. It was a great effort from us.
Your proficiency with the pink ball has been talked about plenty. What is it about these day-night test matches that you enjoy and that you are so good at?
I don't know. I've always said it's a bit like, I find it more like a white ball than a red ball. So whether that plays a part, I'm not sure. We probably haven't seen the pink ball swing as much as we have in the past, certainly through Adelaide and probably here. We probably saw for the first time tonight some more consistent swings. So yeah, I don't know. It's just been something that we've probably clicked with the pink ball with our attack since we started.
Tell us about that last over to Stuart Broad where you got Wokes and Broad in quick succession. Have you ever felt like you were more short of a wicket as you were in those four balls to Stuart Broad and finally getting him that ninth wicket to fall?
No, I finally found a bit of rhythm and I guess we just started to see the ball fade a little bit. Yeah, I thought if I could attack those stumps, Brody's not going to hang around too often. So, yeah, it's probably the worst ball that it actually got the wicket. So, I'll definitely take it.
Mitch, how much say did you get in playing this test match and what was the conversation around resting, pink ball? What was it for you?
There actually was no conversation. So the team had been picked and I didn't know what was going on. So, there was no conversation. I wasn't asked, I wasn't told, I was just playing.
Was it the same with your promotion in the batting lineup? Was that you, Pat, somebody else?
I'm not sure if I was night watchman for Paddy or the fact that he saw the green grass, he told me to go at eight. So, he's changed the lineup and we both missed out. So, might be something in that.
I just want to rewind this entire season and think back to what happened before the T20 World Cup when you had that long period where you could have almost a massive pre-season essentially and you worked on your bowling action. How valuable has that been across this entire year and through to the fifth test of this series?
Didn't have a pre-season, to be honest. We had the series against the West Indies and Bangladesh. Post that, I did 4 weeks straight of quarantine and spent some time with Elisa and the girls team. So
you didn't consider that a period of a pre-season?
Training by myself. It's probably not the ideal preparation for a World Cup, but I certainly enjoyed that time spending it with Elisa and having a bit of an input when asked around the women's team. It was a lot of fun. They're a great group to be around and did my work in the background there. So I guess you could call it a couple of weeks of pre-season. 4 weeks in quarantine, certainly not ideal prep for anything or for anyone. And then I came out of that losing a run-up, so I wouldn't consider that ideal for anything. It probably took me till the back end of the World Cup to find any sort of rhythm and working with Andrew McDonald there. So I certainly felt like the 2 weeks of quarantine we had after the World Cup, where we trained very often, was where things really started to click and where I felt in a pretty good place heading into this series. So that's probably where I felt at my most comfortable, I guess, heading into a series.
How do you feel at this point of a test series? Five test series aren't common anymore. You are a three-format player. How is the feeling for you overall?
Yeah, pretty good. I thought my pace was up throughout the first inning, so it probably helps being a bit cooler here and not playing through the heat. So, I felt pretty good. I felt different periods of time where the rhythm felt better than other times. Probably had a bit of... There's a fair few bowlers had a bit of an issue with the footmarks in Sydney last week, so to come here on a nice surface was probably really good for everyone and certainly nice on the ankles as well.
You've said a few times here You're talking about rhythm. How do you, when you're having periods where you're not feeling in rhythm, how do you actually try and wrestle that back and get into that rhythm, as you say?
I guess there's been different things in different periods of time. There's been times where I've just tried to run in and bowl as fast as I can and play that role. Obviously, my role's not to worry about my economy rate. It's about my strike rate and taking wickets. So times where I've not felt really good, I guess I've tried to come in and bowl fast and be aggressive in that way. Other time, I find a lot of my rhythm comes from my run-up and having a really balanced approach and feeling balanced at the crease. So, there's been different things at different stages that I've found help find that rhythm. This match, it was just trying to find that pace through my run-up to be in a good spot to snap over at the crease, and I think that's probably shown in the consistency of my speed through the air.
It's been a while since Hobart had a test match. Of course, an Ashes test match is a new thing altogether. How do you like Hobart as an Ashes test match venue?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been interesting. None of us have probably played a pink ball game here for Shield cricket, so it's been a bit of a learning curve for everyone here. As I said before, we probably haven't seen too much swing and not really consistent movement off the wicket. It's different grass here as well, so it's not really those big... the big wobble seamers that are gripping like we saw in maybe Melbourne or in Adelaide. It's been a little bit different, and we probably saw a little bit of inconsistent movement or more so movement off the wicket with the older balls. So there's enough there throughout the innings. And then likewise, if we saw Trav in the first innings, he sort of turned the tables on the position of the game and took the attack to England and scored a really impressive 100.
Mitch, as always, well played. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Mitchell Starc joining us here on Grandstand at Stumps. 3 for 53 off his 10 overs, his figures. It wasn't perfect. There were a couple of chances given by the Aussie fielders, particularly the Australian slips cordon, and the wickets tumbled when it was their turn to bat in that final session as well. At 3 for 37, the Australians at Stumps with Smith on 17, Scott Bolman, the night watchman, on 3, an overall lead of 152. 6 wickets in that first session, 4 for Australia to bring about that close of their innings at 303, and then both England openers, Rory Burns and Zach Crawley, departing for 0 and 18 respectively, and then they sort of came in a flurry when it was England's middle order batting. They fell at semi-regular intervals. Two of the better partnerships for England with a 7th and 8th wicket stands after the tea break. It was all over quite quickly with those last 3 England wickets falling in the space of 9 balls. So repeating, Australia 3 for 37, an overall lead of 152 as white rain is falling overhead. Just a few droplets, I think. Nothing really too much to speak of here at Belrive. Pat Cummins picked up 4 wickets and Mitchell Starc, who we just spoke to, with 3. Nathan Lyon wasn't required to bowl for the second time in 3 test matches, and I think the third time in about 14 months. But anyway, Dirk Nannis were pondering the choice of Scott Boland as night watchman. He's the 3rd different night watchman they've used in this series. What did you make of his performance? He hung on at the end?
Oh, I probably lost my house there. I gave him 0 chance to make it through. Such was the way the ball was moving around. That was swinging a long way. It was nipping around a lot. I found that nine impossible to get through, but he did.
Let's get some English reaction from the debutant Sam Billings with Henry Moran.
Sam, good to see you. A bit of a frantic day out there. Where do you see the game at this stage?
Yeah, all results still possible, I suppose. It's a huge session tomorrow morning. We've seen the ball zip around plenty, especially tonight. So the first session tomorrow will be really key in this result.
Frustration for England at times with the ball, opportunities created, perhaps doors opening and then slammed shut by Australia. How frustrating is that for the side?
It is, of course, but Test cricket is a game of waves, and Travis Head really did put us under a lot of pressure in that middle session. I don't think we quite hit our lengths as consistently as we did tonight, for example, and he really did put us under a lot of pressure. But if we can iron that out, and still keep a manageable total to chase, who knows? There's plenty of opportunities in day three, day four. But tomorrow will be a really key session.
How many would be too many? Stands at 152 at the moment, the lead for Australia.
I think anything below 300 is possible. I think, again, earlier with the bat, we created chances in the game where we really did kind of gain the momentum and lost key wickets. Myself and when Wokesy and I were going together, it was a key point where we lost wickets consistently, unfortunately. But we created kind of partnerships, and we did create that momentum at times. A little bit of bad luck as well with a few of the dismissals, but who knows? We keep building, we keep looking forward, and I think we can obviously get a result.
It's been quite some time coming. How does it feel to be a Test cricketer?
It's amazing. Absolutely loved it. Loved every minute out there today, and it was a great challenge, probably against the best seam attack in the world, but yeah, it's far better than sitting on the sofa at home watching it. So, yeah, I just loved every minute, if I'm honest.
You seem to play with quite a lot of freedom out there. Nerves didn't seem to be getting to you.
Yeah, it's been a weird one, I reckon. I've probably been more nervous at the start of yesterday when I was keeping than batting, really. Look, I've been playing consistent cricket, albeit in a different format, but whenever you've had time in the middle and getting runs on your belt, that confidence does, and the flow, the rhythm, that really does help. So, yeah, I'd see it as an opportunity that I didn't expect to have, and I've got nothing to lose. So from an individual point of view, it allowed me to absolutely enjoy it a lot more. I suppose my one-day debut was probably 24, 25. It was all a blur. You don't really soak it up. I really actually managed to soak it up yesterday and enjoy the experience, which I think we don't do enough actually as cricketers. We don't appreciate it until it's far gone. So, yeah, absolutely loved it.
How are the squad? Because you've obviously come in from a different format and they've had quite a tough few weeks on and off the field. How was everyone?
Yeah, it's of course, it's been a brutal... I mean, cricket is a brutal game anyway, isn't it? And it has been tough, but again, my point of view, I've just tried to offer a different perspective, I suppose, a bit of energy, a bit of positivity, and I think there's no dead rubbers. Everyone's got something to play for, especially in this squad. From an individual point of view, there's places up for grabs moving forward. There's the World Test Championship. Every result matters. So absolutely, the group is still driven to get a result out of this game.
How important is it that England's batting shows resilience just to make a bit of a statement at the back end of this series?
Huge. Absolutely, it's huge. As I said, both individually, but as a unit as well, there's just been key moments today that have kind of tipped it back the other way and we've made it tough for ourselves. But there are signs. I know you probably get bored of my positivity, Henry, but there are signs there that there are guys actually really fighting and they're scrapping, and we're not far away, if that makes sense. So hopefully the day is whenever we get to bat tomorrow.
Positivity is never a bad thing, Sam. Good to speak to you. Thanks
no
for your
worries,
time.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, thank you.
England's 700th Test player, Sam Billing, speaking there with Henry Moran. Courtesy of our friends at the BBC. So good to get some reaction from both camps with this match poised at stumps on day two. Australia 3 for 37, a lead of 152 over England. Kristen Beams, Dirk Nanas alongside me, Brett Sprigg, grandstand at stumps. What did you make of, I guess, the Australian execution of their plans with the ball?
Yeah, I think they've been very good, and they've been very good this whole series. And at different times, we've seen different players playing a different role, and Scott Boland was again excellent and probably deserved a couple of extra wickets with some catches going down. Mitchell Starc continues to be outstanding with the pink ball, and Pat Cummins just sneaks in and takes a fourfer, and we see him do it time and time again with the old ball as well as the new one.
For me, it's just their ability to be relentless. They just keep attacking the stumps time and time again and aren't bowling those bad balls that get punished. I think if you look at the English side and what the periods where they've been able to put together any semblance of pressure, they've bowled bad balls, or then they've had to go to a change bowler who's just started poorly and the pressure's all gone. But Australia have been able to increase pressure time and time again, and that's what's bringing about their rewards.
A couple of further things on the Aussie bowling before we get to the batting and discuss England's bowling in turn as well. So Chris Wokes was dropped twice on 0 and 5. Eventually, an astute decision to review a tickle down the leg side off his hip resulted in his dismissal. The Aussie reviewing, there were a couple of non-referrals there as well. It is the mark of a modern captain, I suppose, along with his teammates or her teammates, to be able to know when to review. Not all captains can do it. Tim Payne was an all-out proficient in mastering the art of DRS. How important is it for any given captain to know when to sort of have a closer look in those moments?
I think in this day and age where everyone's got three reviews. You could probably be a bit more aggressive on reviewing. But I think you're leaning in those sort of caught behind decisions or referrals. I think you're leaning a bit more on the keeper. Sometimes as a bowler, you don't know whether someone's hit it or not, but it's the wicketkeeper that would normally be the person that you lean on the most. You know, that was too glaring. What we heard, we heard genuine nicks through the stump mic.
The Milan one, yeah, green.
It's and the Burns one earlier on.
Yeah.
So you would think that someone in the cordon at least is picking that up.
Yeah, I think they've been a little bit conservative, and it's about the process and getting the. I guess being consistent, we always see Nathan Lyon is the one that's judging the height, you know. But I think it's hard when you've got like a Marnus Labuschagne who gets excitable about every ball that nearly goes through the outside edge, and also for Pat Cummins as a bowling captain. And there was a lot of talk about Tim Payne that he was getting it wrong, and I just wonder whether Pat Cummins is a little bit conservative at the start of his captaincy journey.
Yep, spot on. I think he is conservative. I feel as though. There are times, where, particularly off his bowling, where he's a bit sheepish to go and review, almost for want of being seen as greedy, I guess. But, you know, they've got three reviews, and how many times have we seen people run out of reviews? Very, very little.
Scott Boland's figures so far, 14 overs, 1 for 33. What have you seen from him in this test match so far? Obviously, the early start of his career has been tremendous in Melbourne and Sydney, and here he is again. Just another extraordinary performance from him with the ball so far. Just the same again?
Resuming normal service.
Yeah.
It's quite remarkable. I'd love to see the numbers of balls from him, the percentage of balls that are actually going to hit the stumps, and the percentage of balls that he's forcing a batsman to play or at least make a decision. You know, a lot of those runs in this innings would have been through edges or mistimed shots that they've been able to score runs. It's just a stellar start, and it's hard to believe when you see him out there performing so well how he hasn't played before, but you know, at the same time, you understand why he's never played before, because he's had so many fast bowlers in front of him.
And based on what his plan is, which is to hit the stumps, you think he's going to be effective in a lot of different conditions as well. I don't think he's just an Australian-based bowler based on what we've seen so far. He gets the ball up, he's full, he's different, he gives good diversity to the lineup they've got. I don't see him as being a certain starter in every game, but you can see why he'd be a really good asset to have in a squad in lots of different conditions.
I'm sure you've pondered on a few occasions in the past few weeks since he debuted in Melbourne, just as to why he is the way he is, and I guess, is it because he has experience in first-class cricket? 10 years of Sheffield Shield cricket. Could you get what you're seeing from Scott Boland now out of a bowler at, say, 21, 22, 23? How important is the experience?
Probably not, because ego probably comes into it a little bit. When you're a younger bowler and you start taking wickets, you think you are suddenly the enforcer, or you think you're something different to what you are. I think at the maturity level that he's shown to know that, you know, he's not Mitchell Starc that's going to blast people out. He's not Pat Cummins who can bowl the quick bouncer every now and then when he needs to and change up a gear. He's the guy that hits the top of the stump and just keeps bashing that length time and time again. And to his credit, and I think we see the results of that, he's had the patience to keep doing it time and time again, and it's worked for him. And that's, you know, we all could come into games of cricket like this and come in with a plan, but it's the ability to execute it, and he's done it magnificently well.
Yeah, he's a do-a-job kind of bowler, and it's worked for him in Shield cricket. It's working for him here. He hasn't really had to do anything else, and I think that's a nice way to go about your cricket, is you come in and you get your opportunity at an international level, but no one's asking you to do anything different. He's not having to bowl a short ball plan. He's not having to go to plan C, D, E, F. He's been able to just come in and try and hit the stumps, and that'll bode well for him in future test matches. It'll be an interesting one when he does start to get attacked a little bit more, and what that, I guess, that resilience and what he will do differently. But well, from what we've seen, it's pretty effective.
Yeah. It can't go too wrong. You wouldn't have thought. Hit the stumps.
On the batting, David Warner made a pair. A third ball duck to go with 22. The 22 balls he faced in the first innings. Labuschagne for 5. Khawaja 11. The wickets to 4 before stumps. So Australia 3 for 37. again, England set plans. We saw that during the Australian first innings as well, and they'd be pleased with the way they bowled. Ultimately, they're a long way behind. Australia had a 115-run head start, but the Australian batting, a few things did fall apart, especially for the experienced David Warner.
Yes, and I don't like saying, well, that's just the way he plays, but with David Warner, he plays an aggressive brand of cricket. Sometimes when you do that, you're going to have dismissals where you think, oh, that's a terrible shot. But then he's the flip side of that, and having a match winner like that in your side is sometimes he can also go and make 100 in a session. And that's the rub of the green that you can get sometimes. You know, he gets out to a good catch in gully, and you know, other times that's going for four and suddenly he's away. So I don't think we can be too critical of Dave Warner.
It's more that individual disappointment. I think David Warner would be disappointed with the dismissal, even though that is the way that he plays for Usman Khawaja. All of a sudden it's a different game, going from batting in the middle order, swinging ball up top. He's got some pretty good deliveries, so it's a bit of a change for him. So look, I think they'd be disappointed, but at the same time, pink ball under lights, I think you expect that you're going to get some pretty good balls.
I don't think you can read anything into the batting at the moment, because that ball is swinging around a mile and it's incredibly difficult to be out there. You know, Usman made, what did he make, 11 today, something like that. But that ball was moving everywhere and he survived for 38 balls, and that was incredibly difficult. And you've got to say that, you know, can't say he's done his job, but he was on his way to doing a fantastic job for surviving, because that's what Australia needed in that session. If you think Australia go through 3 wickets down tonight, they're in a great position to put on a decent score and put this game to bed tomorrow. If they come out tonight and suddenly lose 5 wickets, then you start thinking, well, maybe England are a little bit of a chance. I don't think they're as much of a chance as Sam Billings thinks, but yeah, I think this is Australia's game.
The fifth test of this series, Australia continues to be in a rather commanding position. It's good night for now from us.
Here is Lyon waiting for Broad. It's back of a lengthy bowl. Swing across the line, clip the top of off stump. And with that, the Australian innings concludes. Lyon out for 31. They rush off for the change of innings. Australia all out for 303.
Caps come in, he bowls, and Corder's on the front foot. Oh, Burns late setting off, and the throw hits the stumps. Crowd like it, the Aussies like it. Umpire Wilson's waiting. The ball rolls away. Oh. No, he's out. He's going to be out. He is going to be out by literally a frame. What a disaster for Rory Burns.
Cummins into Crawley. Bats back close together. He's caught it short leg by Travis Head. Cummins strikes. Crawley's out for 18. Inside edge on the pad, taken a juggling effort by Travis Head, and England, as they always seem to be, are in the early mire at 2 for 29. Cummins ball strike on the pad, Root's given out. Pat Cummins has his man, Joe Root's gone for 34. Doesn't look like he's going to go to the DRS. He's walking in the direction of the dressing room. Quick chat with Ben Stokes. He has 5 seconds left. But his body language says, no, I'm out, and he's shaking his head.
Stark bowled short of a length. Run away, the offside call!
What a catch by the goat! Nathan Lyon takes the catch. Ben Stokes is out for four. England is crumbling.
Billings now hooks, gets it very fine, though. Straight down bowl and straight, he's caught. Caught at fine leg. Cameron Green gets the breakthrough, and England's seventh wicket falls.
Stark bowls. And Broad and bowled, he chops it on. If ever there was a certainty in sport, that was it. Broad is bowled by Stark for a four-ball duck. And England is all out for 188. Another paltry total by this English team. And Australia will lead by 115 runs on the first innings. Cummins gets four.
Flashed away here by Warner and caught. Beautiful catch taken back with a point. Superb diving effort. And Stuart Broad gets the early wicket. David Warner out for a duck. It's a pair for the veteran Australian opener.
So Chris Wokes into Labuschagne. Down the leg side, appeal for Cor. Behind, he's given out. Labuschagne's out for five. Wokes strikes. Australia's 2 for 5. And that's the 16th wicket of the day.
ducks. Here he is facing Wood. He ducks out of the way here. It's taken some of the glove and through to Sam Billings. Usman Khawaja is out. Tried to evade that delivery. I'm not sure how he lost it, but it jumped on him, took the deflection, and the third Australian wicket falls